Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Sports Joe presents the GAA Hour.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the GAR. My name is Lee Costello and I'm delighted to be joined by Niall McIntyre as always. Niall, it's a big weekend for the hurling, so we're going to see if you can keep up with me.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough job, I think, Lee. I know you were busy at the weekend watching all four hurling games and between TG Cahir and RTE, so I'm going to be put through my paces here today.
Absolutely. Another person that was busy was the sniper. He was out in full force, hamstring injuries galore. I know there's lots of games and stuff to talk about, but this is a bit of an anomaly nearly. Jake Morris, Brian O'Mara, Stephen Bennett and Robbie O'Flynn all struck down.
Struck down by the hamstring sniper up in the stand, Lee. Liam Cahill called it the dreaded hamstring on TG Cahir after the match, and that's exactly what it is, isn't it? Like it's kind of the injury that can, I know a lot of injuries can come from nowhere, but the hamstring especially, it could be going at top speed and it just takes you down. Like we know it did it to Robbie O'Flynn, and he's probably the one that you feel most sorry for, do you know, because he pulled that hamstring last year in May in the Munster Championship when Cork and Tipperary drew, just as he was scoring a goal against Tip. Kept him out for 5 months. He came back for his club, only got back for the county final to come on as a sub in October. Made his first start last weekend against Clare, just after scoring a point here against Kilkenny, and it goes again. And he had surgery on that hamstring last year. Like, so
did they even confirm if it's the same hamstring? Because quite often, you know, when you have surgery, you overcompensate in the other leg and then...
Yeah, Pat Ryan said that's disappointing for Robbie. Obviously, after his injury last year, he had to go for an operation. He's very disappointed, but we'll give him the best of care and treatment and hopefully he won't be out for too long. It doesn't seem that bad. He was able to walk off, but it was still disappointing. You'd imagine it was the same hamstring off that. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it's the speedsters, isn't it? The hamstring gets, like Jake Morris would be similar for Tipperary, like, and Robbie O'Flynn, like, that's just...
It's what it does to you mentally, isn't it?
It's not even... you know the way a cruise, you know you're gone and you're gone for 9 months and you come back and you can, maybe after a few games, you can kind of forget about it. Like, Robbie O'Flynn has pulled the hamstring a good few times now. Like, and that is just...
It's just in the back of his head, probably, every game,
It's tough. It's nearly one of the toughest. I've never had a few kind of tweaks and... Yeah. Some people call them the headstring injuries. I'd say that's what I've had.
Oh, yeah. You can't trick yourself into thinking you had it, But...
Touch wood.
Touch wood, yeah. Hopefully no hamstring injuries for the GAR boys.
Yeah, but for the four of them to get it is mad enough. And, like, I just know if Jake Morris, Brian O'Mara, Stephen Bennett or Robbie O'Flynn were playing Fitzgibbon, wouldn't everyone be saying that? Sure, they played a match midweek.
Yeah, too much hurling. Maybe these boys aren't playing enough hurling.
Yeah, yeah, that could be...
It is scary though. I know you can put it down to conditions, the time of year. They're maybe doing a lot of heavy work as well, you know, trying to get yeah. the males in the bank or whatever. But so are all the clubs and the lesser fellas and teams without the facilities and physios and the know-how. You know, it just sort of makes you think, God, how does anyone get through this period?
It's a big, yeah, it's a surprise, like, that so many lads did the hamstrings, like. And, you know, they're going, like, as we all know, it so runs off so quick now, the season, that, like, they'll miss a few league games anyway, depending on how bad it is.
Yeah.
It could be 4 to 5 weeks, could be 6 weeks. You don't really know, like, so.
And then you got to integrate them back in.
Yeah.
And then are they at match pace?
Are they at match pace? And, you know, Davy Fitzgerald and Liam Cahill were both talking about it, and they were kind of saying the same things, you know. We've done quite a bit of work through the month of January. This is Liam Cahill in February, and we're hopeful the boys won't be on the sidelines for too long. Obviously, Stephen Bennett, like Davey said earlier this year, we all know about the hip problems that he has, that this could even be his last year hurling for Waterford, apparently. He's had 3 hip operations by the time he was 20 or something like this. Like, but that's obviously linked a bit to the hamstrings. Like,
yeah.
And he went down, he had a few injuries last year, and Davey said something similar, you know, like he wanted to get the run of games in this year to kind of get up to speed. So not ideal for him, like, and it caught him walking off the field after the game, and, you know, he had a proper limp, like, so
yeah.
You just don't know what the hammers.
No, your heart goes out to them for sure. Into the game itself, and don't worry, we're going to get to the rant, but we'll talk a little about the game first. Now, you'd build up this up to me, hurling in general, you don't get boring games in hurling, and that's why it's always so much better in football. But I was 20 minutes into this game and I was like, I'm going to slap that nail, boy, because this was pretty hard to watch. Now, it does pick up, thank God.
Yeah, like, it was terrible, really. So boring, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was half asleep.
Like, Cork had 2 points by the time 22 minutes were played.
Yeah. Only one of them from play, I think.
One of them from play. Kilkenny were on top, like, but it was so Cork were, like, often you give out, and the criticism that's leveled at Cork is that they, you know, dilly-dally and mess around with the ball a bit too much, and they don't let it in fast to the forwards, and because of that the forwards aren't moving because they know they're not going to get the ball, and they're messing around with the ball. And, you know, I suppose the problem for them in the first 20 minutes of this game was that the short passes weren't going to hand, and they were dropping them, and Kilkenny were just picking them off and getting scores. And as well as that, they were running straight through the middle, and there seemed to be no Cork people there to stop them. Like, so it's hard to watch, wasn't it?
Yeah,
definitely. I felt like I was watching football.
Yeah, that's a close one. But like, Cork did bring it back, to be fair. You know, just before half time, they started to make a game of it, and then they, you know, there were stages where you thought they're actually going to win the game in the end. But that's sort of always in Cork's makeup, that, you know, they're just never too far away, are they? Like, and they're always dangerous. You've got players like Patrick Horgan and, I was going to say, Shane Kingston. I don't think he actually got on the score sheet. Always keep an eye out for him.
Yeah, he had one of his, definitely one of his poor games. Like, got a few chances and just was never able to get going. And I suppose that's kind of a thing that's leveled at him a good bit as well, is that he's brilliant when he comes off the bench, and then sometimes when he starts, he doesn't. Look, it's very early in the season, like, and everyone has a bad day. But yeah, sure. Like, it looked like it was going to be a bit of a hammer, and then Cork got their lifeline just before half time from Conor O'Callaghan, who's one of their newer players. He scored a brilliant goal. Actually finished it lovely as well. There was a defender coming to him. And, you know, when you're running in from the wing, the goalie kind of expects you to go to the far side.
Yeah.
He went to the near side and kind of caught Owen Murphy out there. So yeah. That gave them the bit of the lifeline then. And then,
and it got the crowd up again, because they were just subdued.
Completely. Like, yeah. there was 16,000 people at the game, but it was the atmosphere was, like, it was dead, wasn't it?
Yeah, at that stage, definitely. But it did. It sort of sparked it into life. And then we had a game to watch, at least. But how much of that, too, is, like, are you going, like, credit to Kilkenny and just how well prepared they were?
Well, I suppose, like, they were hurling well, and Kilkenny, they're always decent. Like, you know, they're never going to be too bad. And when Cork were struggling, there's no better team to punish them and pick them off. And I suppose Adrian Mullen was the man of the match on the day, and I just think I'd say he's probably the most accurate shooter in hurling, to be honest. Like, left or right, he got 5 points at the weekend and four of them off the left. His left is just unbelievable. He can score, he can off the back foot, over the shoulder, standing up. The very first point he got was from his own 45. He scored one the second from the wing off the right when he had time to turn on to his left leg. So it just shows how versatile he is off both sides. Just an unbelievable shooter. Like, give him a chance and he'll probably finish. And lads like him were punishing Cork then. So but then in the second half it was nearly the opposite. Like, and
yeah,
it's funny, if Cork were doing what Kilkenny were doing in the second half, everyone would be giving out about Cork and this is typical Cork and they're messing around with the ball and they won't just let it in. And this is what Kilkenny were doing. Like, they were caught out a good few times. Mikey Butler was caught trying to hit a short pass that wasn't on, coming out of defence, straight over the bar. Owen Murphy was caught with a few short puck outs. Like, and they kind of got into that malaise that Cork were in the first half. And that's when it looked like Cork were going to win.
Yeah, but they didn't win in the end. That's two defeats now for Cork. I know they kind of see a face with the comeback and the way they were able to rally. But, like, you know, is it concerning times for Cork?
Probably is a little bit. Like, Donal Cusack, I know we're going to get on to him, he's not too concerned. He said Pat Ryan could win the next 10 leagues and it won't matter. Jackie Tyrrell wasn't really buying that one.
No.
He was saying, he could do it a league, like, you know. But, like, it would be concerning. Like, they've lost to Clare and they've lost to Kilkenny at home. And, you know, they obviously lost a tight game to Limerick last year that knocked them out of the Munster Championship. Every team wants to win these tight games.
Yeah, but that's it. They're always losing tight games. You know, they're always thereabouts. They're always getting really close, but they just seem to always fall short, you know, just right at the, I don't know, that last hurdle or whatever. Like, what is it the Cork are missing? Is that a mentality thing?
I'm not sure. Is it a mentality thing? Like, I think, like, what it is, it's not ideal to have lost the first two league games. Like, it's not as if they haven't been terrible, and there is probably a lot of positive signs that they can take from it as well. One of them is definitely Sean Toomey, who was playing wing forward. And I suppose he's just not your typical kind of Cork player in that he's very direct. He's a left-hander, first of all, so a little bit unorthodox that way. Holds the hurl in the left hand. Very direct, very strong. Probably not known hugely as a scorer, but, you know, loves to get stuck in and loves the battle. And, you know, had a great battle at the weekend. Won a lot of... Christy O'Connor actually had a stat in the Irish Examiner that he directly set up 1-8 in the direct assist for 1-8 in the last two games. So, you know, that just shows his... Like, he'll obviously be a huge positive, because that is the thing that they say about Cork, is that they're too many of the kind of the same hurlers who, you know, are all brilliant stick men and will pass the ball around. But you probably want someone who's just going to drive straight through the heart of a defence. Like,
yeah.
And he definitely does that. And that's why the loss of Robbie O'Flynn, it would be such a blow for them, and was such a blow for them last year too, because that's what he does. He's one of my favourite players to watch, because he just goes when he gets the ball, takes, doesn't matter who it is, he's going to take them on. Like, so they're the boys they need.
Mm-hmm. Now, one Cork man whose mentality you can't question is Donal Logue Cusack. He was ready for fighting every man, just, and about anything as well. But everyone, I'm sure, has seen this by now. Like, he sort of went on a bit of a monologue before the game. First of all, when you seen it, before we even get into it, what was your initial reactions? Did you even see it coming?
No, I didn't see it coming, because the programme was only after starting, and it goes down to Joanne on the sideline and you're watching this and it just takes off. Like, and it's like, it's I thought it was hilarious to watch. Like,
yeah, I thought it was really entertaining, to be fair. I mean, I think that probably added to the way the start of the game was so dull, because you were actually so entertained before the match had even started. But yeah, like, he touched on a lot of subjects, but obviously this is based on the whole Cork's financial situation, the renaming of Porky Quaid to Super Value. And he basically the essence of the what he was trying to say was that like the GAA need to take responsibility just as much as Cork do. And he mentioned things like, you know, he compared them to the Tories who point the finger at like immigrants. He said that there's too many stadiums. Why do we have all of these stadiums? Mm. You know, he was making so many points you nearly couldn't. What he was trying to say.
Yeah, his overall point, I suppose, was about the stadiums, wasn't it? That there's too many of them. And like he probably does have a point that they're not all needed. Like, and like he was a very funny kind of a reference he had there about you're going over to a couple and they've a nice front room, but they've no dinner on the table. Like,
yeah.
Like you take that match the other night and there's only 16,000 people at it.
Yeah.
Like the capacity is up around 50,000. Like, do you know? And it'd be very rare that would be full. A lot of people are saying that the stadium, like obviously Munster played in Páirc Uí Chaoimh last weekend, but that should be done more often. Do you know?
Yeah, get the most out of it.
Like, do every county need these big, huge stadiums? That look, his point is obviously based on Cork because they're the ones with the 30 million deaths because of their stadium.
Yeah, and everyone's blaming them. You know, like, why did you build this stadium when you obviously, you know, you don't have the capacity to even try to fill it and to make the most out of it. He was sort of not shifting the blame, but at least trying to share the blame to the GAA with the likes of, is it Tony Ryan?
Tom Ryan.
He was the finance director since 2007. He gave the green light for it to go ahead. The GAA gave the green light for it to go ahead. You know, you don't just sign these things off willy-nilly. You know, surely you're looking ahead before you make big decisions like this. So, I mean, it is an interesting one, you know. And Jackie was sort of on his side. It was not for everything, obviously, but I think he was in agreement that Cork got themselves in this situation, but the GAA need to be responsible as well.
Yeah, I suppose it's probably a bit of both, like, but like it was going to take a Cork person to say that, you know, that
that's his overlaining point,
because he's obviously trying to look out for the best for Cork GAA players. Yeah. Do you know? I don't know, it's all, he's just he could come out with anything really, Don Logue, in fairness, but like on the other hand you'd give out about a lot of pundits that they, do you know, it's a bit boring
and they say nothing
that's
really.
What a lot of people say nowadays is that oh the Sunday, bring back Spillane,
Joe Brawley
and Brawley, and like when they were there they probably weren't as appreciated.
Yeah,
you know, they would have been, people would have been giving out stink about them because they didn't agree with them. And it's kind of the same for Don Cusack, like.
Yeah.
Like, everyone loves to give out about him. Yeah. But he's entertaining to watch, like. And sometimes he goes off and he goes overboard and, you know, maybe there's a bit of a Cork bias in it at times. But, like, it's still, and other people are kind of saying, like, when is Don Lowe going to run for chairperson to fix these problems? Like his job, in fairness to him, is to be on the television, like, so.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, and when you're on the television, your job is to highlight these issues.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, he's doing that. He's definitely doing his job. But like, no one can say otherwise. And if you're on RTE on a massive show like that, then your job's also to be entertaining. Yeah. And he's doing that as well. He's just one of them. You love him or you hate him, but you're going to watch him.
They were really on one, weren't they? And then Joanne got them to talk about the game for a few minutes. And then the boys just were still kind of pumped up. And Don Logue was going on about, you know, we haven't won or Pat Ryan can win all the leagues he likes and it won't make any difference. And then Jackie Terrell got stuck into him and told him, like, 2005 is a long time ago since he last won in All Ireland. And Don Logue telling him, mind your own house, Jackie. Like, so it was.
Even the way they turn and face each other, like, are they squaring up to each other on TV?
Yeah, they were roaring at each other. Yeah. Because Stick Season was playing in the back.
I heard that, yeah.
And you could barely.
It was such a juxtaposition, you know, this backdrop of this really cheerfully sort of song or sad song.
And he was kind of roaring at Joanne as well. And in fairness to her, she kept her composure during it, like, because it actually descended into a bit of madness. Like, Jackie Terrell even went off about how bad the pitch was at the start.
Yeah.
When Páirc Uí Chaoimh opened, he was like, centre of excellence. This was some centre of excellence when when the pitch opened and there was holes in the pitch. Like, it was just.
And then there's your, like, I mean, it's grand now, but.
I thought it was brilliant.
I did. I really enjoyed it. To be fair, now I have to say I probably enjoyed it even more than the game, as much as the game did manage to to save itself. The other match obviously was Tipperary v Galway. This was more like hurling, more hurling that you talk about, a proper shootout. And then you'll be happier again, obviously, Tipperary getting the win.
Yeah, Tipperary, I suppose they'd beaten Dublin last week. Dublin were poor, like, so you weren't going to read too much into that, but they definitely impressed yesterday, and there was lots of things that like Liam Cahill will be very happy about. I suppose the man of the moment is Garrod O'Connor. Mm-hmm. He got 12 points. He scored 133 in the last 8 days. You know, in big games, like, so the first two rounds of the league, he's played three full games, hasn't been taken off. So scored 12 points against Dublin, three from play on last Saturday. Then Wednesday won the Fitzgibbon Cup quarter final for UL against UCC. He's going for his third Fitzgibbon Cup in 3 years. So he's obviously a key man there. He got man of the match that night. And on yesterday, was man of the match, was absolutely brilliant. Couldn't miss if he tried, nearly. He was in that sort of form.
113,
four from play again. And, you know, it would have kind of been a given in Tipperary that when Jason Ford comes back in, that he will take over the freeze. But Garrod O'Connor, I think he missed one free yesterday. It was from about 100 yards, so he wasn't really a favourite to score. But his shooting is just unbelievable. Free-taking, unbelievable. Doesn't look like he's ever going to miss. And was the same last weekend, and was the same for Huell. So he's a huge man. A lot of teams are looking for, you know, like we talked about with Cork, the big physical fella who's going to offer something different, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And he is well able to finish as well. So if he can keep up that form, he'll be a huge plus for Tip.
Yeah, and like we were talking a couple of weeks ago about the whole Conor Glass thing, about being such a busy man and all these games, obviously he's playing with his club and then 6 days out playing for his county, captaining them and stuff. Like, I mean, this is nearly on par with that, you know, with the amount of games in such succession and the high quality games and the fact that he's the top performer in nearly all of them.
Yeah, like if he was the one that pulled his hamstring, there'd been someone getting the blame, do you know? Yeah. He's obviously getting through it, no about him. He's out again Wednesday in Dura Bearfield in the Fitzgibbon Cup semi-final. Huell are playing the University of Galway, so the games keep coming for him. Just on that, Pat Ryan had said that he chose not to play Kieran Joyce, Cormac O'Brien and Brian Hayes for Cork against Kilkenny. They're obviously playing Fitzgibbon as well. He said they would have played four games in 9 days, so we felt it was prudent not to have them involved. So
yeah. That seems like common sense when you say it that way. Yeah. But I mean, a lot of managers don't say it that way.
Yeah, that's it. Like, and when it works out well, like, Tip probably wouldn't have won that game without Garrod O'Connor. So, like, you can see Liam Cahill, why he played him absolutely as well. And he, as you'll see there, I see you're about to read out a quote that's from Tipperary and Galway from Liam Cahill there. That, you know, he's mad to win this league.
Yeah, I get hit with a lot of questions about the league, that it's nearly a dreaded thing now to go and win, and the league, from the way the whole league to the championship is structured. But the National League, I've always said, is a national title, and we in Tip need to start get back to winning and winning silverware. You can see his point there, because like there's something to be said about just climbing the steps and lifting a trophy and winning, and you know, sort of looking at the wasteland of all the teams that you've beaten to get there and being able to say we did that, we belong here, and then taking that mentality into the championship.
Yeah, well, he loves to win. That's the kind of mantra he has, and it was used against him with his last year at Waterford when they won the league and they came out and had a really poor championship campaign two or three weeks after it, like. So, but he's obviously going with the same sort of mantra, wants to build up the bit of confidence. And look, I suppose we'll see later on in the summer if it's the right way to go about it. But like, he's playing a lot of young lads, like, and they're getting their chance and they're taking their chance. So there's definitely nothing wrong with it. And Tipperary people will be very happy. Garrod O'Connor's clubmate, actually, from Mind Temple 2, Conor Bowe, is another one of the sort of standout performers for Tipperary. He kind of came onto the scene as a corner forward. You know, he won an All Ireland 20 with Tip and was the main forward, scoring goals the whole time. And he made a move back to centre back for his club this year in the county championship, and he's back to wing back with Tipperary now and going brilliant. Got 2 points yesterday from wing back, and he was interviewed after the game, and he said, "This wasn't something that he was in great form." In fairness to him, he's like, "This wasn't something that I brought to the management. It was just one night. They were playing a game, and the backs were wearing the bibs, and Liam Cahill told me to put on a bib." Like, so, you know, isn't it funny that that's the way a lad can change from a forward to a back?
Yeah, and your whole career is just taking a sideways step, nearly.
That's it.
And even your identity, like, you know, people see themselves very
exactly.
much. I'm a forward, and you know, that's a part of it.
Yeah, and he was brilliant yesterday and was very good last week as well. So that's another option for Tipperary, and another definitely big boost for them. Like Tip were kind of eager to get one back on Galway, having been knocked out of the championship, and they were so poor that night in the Gaelic grounds last year. So they were eager to get one back in Galway, and they did. They were the better team. Probably classic Tipperary. They let Galway back into the game, having been 8 or 9 points up after 40 minutes. But Tipperary, that's probably a problem that Tipperary have, is that when they get ahead early on in games, they always let teams back into the game, and it was level with 5 minutes to go. So definitely big boost for them that they were able to see it out then after. A bit of a disappointing performance now from Galway, though.
Yeah, disappointing as close as the game was, and I know the scoreline kind of changes that. What about going for a goal there at the end and making that decision?
Yeah, sure, dead right.
Yeah?
Yeah.
No, did you have any thoughts in your head, he maybe just going to...
Well, I think he looked over at Liam Cahill and he kind of went like this, as if he was going to hit it over the bar. Maybe that was confused the goalie now, or something like that. The goalie would obviously have been ready for a shot anyway, but if he put it over the bar, Tip would have been 3 points up. Like, do you know?
Like, hardly disastrous.
Yeah, but exactly. Like, they're still...
But that's what makes it cooler that he went for goals.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's why, you know. Yeah. You're just sort of glad that he didn't put the game to bed.
Yeah.
The way he was shooting, like, he was never...
Yeah, exactly. When he's playing with that confidence, you definitely wouldn't stop him. Henry Shefflin, I'd say he's slightly frustrated at, you know, different aspects of how Galway are playing. He talked about... their slow start, and whether it's like something to do with the warm up and things like this. You know, they had a bad loss, the Walsh Cup, it probably isn't a big barometer for it to go by, but they had a bad loss to Wexford in that. Created no goal chance against Tipperary yesterday. Don't think Barry Hogan had a save to make. They were missing a few players. Cathal Mannion, obviously a key forward. Declan McLaughlin, who's been good this year, he has a broken bone in his hand or something along those lines. Like, so Galway to be slightly worried with how things are going, and you know it's definitely a big year for Henry Shefflin there this year.
No, it is, because like what you know, there was an initial buzz when he took over just because of the player that he was and the pedigree that he had, and taking over Galway, a team that obviously, you know, are competing at least for All Ireland, or you know, they're in the conversation. And then last couple of years, you know, the Leinster finals, things that got like, it was like, what's the mood around him now? Do the people of Galway still have confidence in him, do you think?
I'd say they do. Like, you know, they ran Limerick close 2 years ago. They looked at half time last year in the semi final that they were coming with a big one here, that they could even knock Limerick out. Obviously completely faded then in the second half of that semi-final. So that was a blow for them. But yeah, like, it's his third year there. So like, you'd be hoping that there's...
Yeah.
If like Kilkenny are going for 5 in a row Leinsters, you'd be hope that Galway will, at the minimum, you'd imagine that that'll be their aim, is to end Kilkenny's dominance there, to win the Leinster Championship. And, you know, to get back then...
Yeah,
to an All Ireland semi final, and yeah, like it's just a a big year, like, you know, yeah. you'd probably think that this could be the, if something doesn't happen this year, then like, yeah, then where are you going? Like,
you start asking questions, sort of. Yeah, we asked you, the audience, to tell us about your worst or most unusual training drill in the GAA, and we've got some whoppers now.
We have got some whoppers. Definitely. There was one absolute beauty sent into us. Go straight into sprints with no warm up. It was very successful. Only 8 out of the 20 pulled a hamstring. So
I'm more surprised at the 12. That was quick math. I hope that's right. That didn't pull a hamstring or pull something, because I can't imagine getting out of the car for training and sprinting. Do you know what I mean? I'm an old man, to be fair, but I need a very thorough warm up and even just to mentally get myself right.
Yeah, you like the resistance bands and that kind of thing, or?
Oh yeah, I'm long gone. That's where I'm at now.
Really?
Yeah, I couldn't function. I don't think otherwise. Everything just seizes up.
Yeah,
it's brutal. Yeah. But then I won't do a cool down. I've always hated them, so I refused to. So maybe that's my problem. An extra long warm up, no cool down. Get out of there.
Yeah. Well, look, you don't want to be going sprinting straight away at the start of training, anyway.
No, I don't want to go sprinting at all. But straight in, start of training is definitely not the place to be. Another one here, well described: running at full speed, falling on the ground off the whistle, rolling over, and getting up on your feet, and then just running on.
So falling on the ground at the sound of the whistle.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just rolling about and then jumping straight back up again. I don't know any science or method behind that. How fast are you running as well?
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm just running into people. I had a coach, to be fair, once that when it was really, we were only kids actually, but it was really windy and wet, and everyone was sort of like with their shoulders up to their necks going brr, you know, and no one looked like they were ready for a game. And he wasn't like aggressive towards it, he suggested that we all actually got down on the grass and rolled in it and then got up. And then it was sort of like, because you instinctively have like a thing to stay clean and to stay warm, but then once you're in that stage, maybe releases something to say that you can actually, right, well, you might as well get stuck in now and get, yeah, and literally get, you know, down and dirty with it. But that's as close to that defense as I can get with that.
Yeah, one lad, this obviously hurler, he said that our manager used to lay out a load of tires, a row of 10 tires, and we'd run along and belt each tire as we're passing by it. So that's obviously from the, you wouldn't probably get it in modern hurling because very few lads pull on the ball, even though we did see a few pulls at the weekend. But you can see the logic in it, you know, getting, yeah, especially for young lads, getting them to swing the hurl and, you know, swing hard. And
well, it'll tire you out if anything. I expect it'd be more tiring laying out 10 big tires onto the pitch.
Well,
that sounds like a nightmare of a drill to set up. Definitely thinking outside the box a little bit, you know, very Rocky Balboa-esque.
Yeah, yeah, toughen lads up.
Speaking of toughing lads up, I got one that I can't to say who it's about or who told me, but apparently a known county coach, a really good coach and a really successful one, was a manager, sort of starting out in his managerial career, that'd be about 10 years ago now, and he was managing a club in Derry, and he lined all of the players up and he punched each one of them in the stomach making his journey down, and like asking them how badly do they want it this year, and like seeing how they react, you know, if they wince or do they crumble or whatever. And I think it's like the idea behind it, well, I don't really know, to be fair, other than you're maybe just a bit wired, but is I don't know, like a conditioning thing, like show me literally how much you want it. You're going to have to physically go through this pain, but Has the manager ever done that to you now?
Was that for a game or what was it?
No, I was at a training session.
Okay.
As so I'm told. As
so
I'm
you just
told.
Had them around in a circle? And
no, in a lane. In a straight lane. Like, and then just individually, one by one,
takes
as he was talking.
Him, like,
takes a free dig
in the stomach.
Yeah. Just free digs. That was such a... Maybe it was he was annoyed at two or three of them and everyone got like a pat. And he got a secret dig in at the ones he was annoyed at. There's a good way of getting in and around it. But that's probably the most mental
one.
Yeah,
a manager giving a lad a shot, like, but...
Yeah, it doesn't sound like out of the realms. You know, as mad as it is, when you think about some of the managers that are floating about or the coaches.
Yeah.
Some of the wing nuts. But he is very successful. I have to clarify that. Yeah. Like, and in fact, unbelievably successful. So, you know, maybe there's something in it now.
Maybe there is. This is probably the best one that was sent into us. It's called Last Man Standing. So there's two groups and they're standing outside of a square.
Oh, yeah.
And the manager calls how many lads that are required to run into the square. So he could call, say, three, and three would run in from each group. And this says that whoever is the last man standing in the square wins. So you just have to knock lads to the ground. So it's a bit of a Royal Rumble, like.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's like. Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, or something.
So if you get knocked to the ground, you're gone. Like, you're just wrestling lads to the ground.
I would not last in that at all. There'll always be one guy that just takes it so far as well.
Yeah.
Going in just lumping boys.
Well, it should probably be the lad who is able to kind of sit in the... Even though it's just a square, you're not really going to be able to hide anywhere. But if you can keep your bib dry, like, keep your bib clean.
Yeah.
You might have a better chance, like, rather than going in all guns blazing.
Yeah.
Trying to knock out everyone, like.
I'm trying to think. I'd have no tactical approach, really, for survival. Maybe hold back the run a little bit, try to see if they can push each other out before I make it to the box.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be my thinking of it. Then there's some obvious ones. I'm sure we all played this game, the head, shoulders, knees. In football, we usually do it with a ball, or maybe do it with a bib.
Yeah.
You're facing the person in front of you, and someone will shout heads or shoulders or knees, and you're obviously touching that part of your body. And then when they shout ball, it's a race to see who can pick up the ball first. But that's just good crack. I think it's more of a warm-up thing. Like, managers do come in every now and again, and I think they sense that the mood in the camps may be low or something.
You'd kind of, lads would kind of lighten up then when there's a drill like that.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, he gets it. And maybe he's ran the legs off them the last couple of sessions. And boys are sort of dreading going in and maybe questioning whether they should go to training or not. So they shake it up a little bit. There's definitely a thinking in it. The Malcolm running drill. Have you ever done it?
Yeah, someone sent this in to us. Just said it was the hardest drill that they've ever done.
Yeah.
So it's kind of similar sort of vibe to the Bronco. We know how hard the Bronco is. So it's two cones. So you're starting in midfield.
Yeah.
On the line, and you have a cone 10 meters one side and cone 10 meters the other side. So you run to the cone 10 metres away from you, go down and do a burpee, get back up, run to the middle, do a burpee there, run to the other side, do a burpee there, come back to the middle, do a burpee there, and then you have one rep done. So Malcolm is 6 reps of that. So that's tough going, and especially if it's in the muck and dirt, like.
Yeah. No, that's really tough going. The burpees in general are just awful, and the muck and dirt, you know, they pull at your legs and you're trying to get up and going, and then you're gasping for air and you're sprinting to the next cone and you're no sooner up that you're down. Oh yeah, no.
Yeah, and when you're looking across at other lads and they're, you know, you're competing, like, that's a very tough one, like.
Yeah, definitely. No, that's the winner now for
that could be the type of thing lads be doing now this time of the year, like when clubs are gradually getting back into training, you know, and you're kind of putting in the hard yards, like, definitely wouldn't fancy it, like.
No, yeah. We were big into a Bronco test. What about you? Would you have done?
Yeah, that's kind of...
It's the go-to, isn't it?
Yeah. I think I prefer that to the Malcolm there.
No, I prefer it, but, like, well, the one thing that always annoyed me about the Bronco or even the beep test, and this is all the way through underage to now, you would do it at the start of the year when you're at your own fittest.
Yeah.
And then you just wouldn't do it again.
Yeah.
And the point is to get a score and then do, like, I don't know, 6 weeks of training. Then you do it again, you get a higher score, presumably, because you've done a lot of training and you feel confident then going into the season, and you maybe do it again, I don't know, in that little period between league and championship or something. But like, it's when they don't do it again, then I just think, what'd we do that for?
Yeah, that's always the way.
We'll go back to the hurling here, and we're going to talk about Wexford v Offaly, which is full of talking points. It was a draw in this match. And if you had to say it now at the start of the game that Offaly were going to get a draw here, probably thinking that's a good result, no?
Yeah, you probably think to be delighted, but then you see the interview with Jason Sampson, their captain, and Killian Kiley after the game. The two boys were nearly
distressed. Like. And for good reason, like, because obviously Offaly, you know, they'd gathered a good lead in the first half. They were hurling really, really, really well. And divine intervention, just to help them out that little bit further, Wexford get two players sent off, you know, so they're down to 13 men. But really, it was actually Wexford who squandered the last chance of the match, and it ended up a draw. So you can see why Offaly are frustrated. But we're going to get stuck into those red cards, and the Jack O'Connor one in particular, because Jack did the, you know, the Abraham Simpson thing when he comes in whistling and then just exits straight away. Yeah, yeah. He was on the pitch for two full minutes before getting sent off, and it was a controversial one.
It was. It's always a controversial one when it's that face guard rule, like. Mm-hmm. So the rule is that deliberately pulling on or taking hold of a face guard or any part of an opponent's helmet is a red card.
Yeah. And he did do that.
So initially I thought Jack O'Connor was extremely hard done by, because I thought it was actually just a face guard that you had to pull. He actually didn't touch the face guard. He just put his hand in your man's helmet, like.
Yes, okay.
So I thought he was extremely hard done by in that sense, but it is pulling or taking hold of any part of the opponent's helmet. Jack Connor was hard done by, because David King started it by, he had a fairly firm hold of Jack Connor's helmet when this high ball is coming down on top of him. And at that stage, you can, like, we've seen so many replays of it, you can see that Jack is kind of doesn't know what's going on, really, and he's kind of, it's as if he's kind of blinded or stunned a little bit, and he kind of puts his hand over and just to grab anything, because you would, like.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You know, when someone's doing that to you, you just try and grab something.
Yeah.
And I feel that he was hard done by now. I think the rule is a little bit too, and look, you're going to tell us why the rule was brought in. But I think there should be some sort of a distinction between, like, how hard it's, like, because there's a big difference between giving someone a proper tug on the face guard, and, like, that's extremely dangerous. Like, you can draw their neck any sort of way, or else just kind of, like, basically patting someone and, like, taking hold of someone's helmet. Like, that's not dangerous. Like, there has to be some sort of a, it probably should be left up to referees, like, to distinguish, like, what is dangerous and what's
interpretation
not.
Interpretation of it, really, yeah.
There's a good reason the rule was brought in.
No, yeah, definitely. The rule was brought in 2014 because of an incident in 2010 between Declan Fanning and Stephen Banville, is it?
Yeah, from Wexford. That was in a qualifier between Tip and Wexford.
And in the incident, Fanning had to get 25 stitches in his ear because it was sliced right open. People might remember this, the video was doing the rounds at the time. Dak's helmet was pulled off and his ear was almost tore in two. Laura Corbett writes in his book, Peter Merchant had some serious work to attend to in the dressing room, and anyone who saw the injury was shocked by it. Declan came back and sat on the bench shaking. He wouldn't play at fullback again that year, but fortunately for him, he was just as capable at wingback, and that's where he slotted in for the rest of the season. Imagine he was less versatile because he would have missed out. And then you see the photo even now of his ear, and it's all stitched up, and the damage that it's done. So
yeah, like 25 stitches is some amount to get in your ear. Like,
yeah, it was such a small part of your
ear. That's why the rule was brought in, and that was
well, when incidents like that come in, then you do want to have like a hard fast. There'll be situations where there's a grey area, and it's maybe not the fairest thing in the world, but at least it prevents any of that.
Yeah. Yeah,
and possibilities.
So that was a horror show, and I suppose after Keith Rossiter, the Wexford manager, he was very sort of measured, and like he said that no, Jack actually deserved to get sent off. He said, you know, you grab the face guard, you're going to get red. He did say that I thought the two of them should have went together, from looking back on it there now. And yeah, I wouldn't blame Sean Stack for sending Jack off. Like, so that was fairly sporting from Keith Rossiter.
But it was,
I still think O'Connor was unlucky, to be honest, I have to say.
Yeah, well, I thought that was a very measured interview from him. He said that's the rule, so Jack should have been sent off. And he made the very fair point that Jack's helmet was also being pulled, yeah. So it should be both. But like, surely the fairest thing there would have been either neither get sent off or both get sent off.
Yeah, like the ref obviously didn't see that. King was real discreet in how he did it. He kind of had it,
yeah,
kind of huddled in over his head, yeah, and kind of had it grabbed tight. And Sean Sack obviously didn't see it. Like, but like, if you're sending Jack O'Connor off, like, you need to, like, you need to have a better kind of understanding of what's going on. Like, and
yeah, if you're going to make a decision like that, what did you think of the interview process at the end, where they could actually show the manager, you know, what happened? I thought that was like an added, yeah, benefit just to the viewing of it, you know, because you always see managers, they always do the old, oh, I didn't see it, like.
Yeah, the Arsene Wenger classic.
Yeah, that's it.
Like, it puts them on the spot, really, doesn't,
yeah,
it? Like,
yeah, but then he made sure that he made his point of view shared before he saw it.
Yeah.
He said, well, before I seen it, I thought they were both, yeah, at it. And then when he seen it, he sort of confirmed, well, that sort of proves my point. So it kind of made him come across very well, but I think it will catch a few managers out if they stick with it.
Oh, it definitely will. Yeah. Some lad mightn't want to see it at all. Like.
No, they still can't see it because of the rain and just wiping the screen.
Yeah.
Then there was a second red card. It was maybe less controversial.
Definitely, yeah. Charlie McGuckin was sent off. And it reminded me of John McGrath getting sent off in the 2019 semi-final against Wexford, when he was just on the ground and man has won the ball in front of him, and you're on the ground, you're no use, like, you can't really win the ball, you should probably just quit, like, cut your losses and don't do anything. But John McGrath hit out, I think it was Damien Rec back then, and Charlie McGuckin hit out this time, just gave your man a belt on the shoulder from the ground, like, so he was always going to get sent off.
Yeah,
like,
it's just a bit of a desperate lunge kind of thing.
Yeah,
I don't know,
it was pure desperation.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah.
So he had to go, and I suppose that's why Offaly from there would have been thinking, like, we should win this game now that they're down to 13 men. You know, wet conditions, and I suppose that's what will hurt them so much, is that they went, probably were right to go for a sharp poke out when they were 1 point up at the last, in the dying minutes. Mm-hmm. But the sharp poke out got intercepted. The goalie kind of sold the cornerback short, and Wexford got in, Lee Chin got in, and Seamus Casey, who has been a huge positive for Wexford. I think he took the point lovely to level it up. And, you know, he was good for his club this year. They got to the county final. I'll get Glenn Bryan. And he looks like a lad who's going to, you know, come on. Like, Wexford are playing so many young lads in the league, and a lot of them are impressing. And I suppose that's why Keith Rossiter won't be too concerned that, mm-hmm, you know, like, Offaly will be a good team. They are a good team as well. Like, they have a lot of good young players. Like, Wexford were missing the likes of Liam Ryan, Conor McDonald, Matthew O'Hanlon, Liam O'McGovern, Dermot O'Keefe. You know, so five key players and a few more as well. Like, so, and while they will need the youngsters, they definitely do need a few youngsters to take positions. But they are getting some positives from it too. Like, the likes of Keane Malloy, Connor Foley have been very good as well. Like, so, like, they won't be overly, like, while it might be seen as a shock that they didn't win, like, they won't be overly concerned, I'd say.
Yeah. Afterwards, Keely got man of the match. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
And he, I noticed during the match, and this is just something that I noticed, that someone obviously who's not a big hurling man, he came off for a while with his, I thought he dislocated a finger or he broke a finger, and then when I was watching him get his Man of the Match award, I could see that his knuckle was sort of busted and cut, so maybe that's what it was.
It?
Yeah, but I'm just sort of thinking, I've actually broken all of my fingers, weirdly, either with football or boxing or one car door incident, but in hurling, surely, to me, every game you're going to stave or break a finger. Because, I mean, the weight of the ball, the catching it at the pace you catch it in, especially, yeah. And then men with sticks are just battering you with yeah. them. Like, I mean, it actually blows my mind that you aren't all deformed hands. Like, how common is it, or am I?
Well, George O'Connor is the famous one from Wexford. His hands are just like his fingers. I think he's broken them all and broken his hands so many times, and his hand is completely kind of
shattered,
deformed yeah. nearly, in that it's like their fingers are curled up. And I know a few other lads as well who have the fingers kind of it's kind of formed into a little claw, like out of breaking it so much, like.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't have it as much, like you'd never break it from catching the ball.
Well, really?
Like very, very.
You do
very,
in football now, in fairness.
Yeah.
Because you just go to catch it and you end up stabbing it.
That you might you bend know? It back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, the odd time yeah. it might happen, yeah. but very rarely now.
Yeah. No, I just like have such admiration for Ains, but I assume honestly that it happens all the time. Like, it's just, and I seen him coming off, and I was like, how does that not happen more often? Because you have it, and you are like, you know, ducking and diving through people yeah. battering you with sticks, you know, trying to get this tiny little ball out of your hand
yeah.
that's clenched together. So very impressed, actually.
Did you break all yours boxing?
No, mostly football, actually. Just pearly catching. And one day a guy stood in my hand and it broke three of them. So that was a good chunk of them, to be fair.
Right.
What was I doing on the ground, to be fair? So all my own fault, as my father would say. And then one of the other big games that was on television this weekend was Waterford v Clare. Obviously, usually always bit of blockbuster there with Davy Fitz playing against or managing against
his own county. Yeah, yeah, the Davy Derby. and he hasn't won that in a good while. Lost mm-hmm. two championship games for Wexford against Brian Lohan's Clare, and lost again at the weekend. You'd imagine he'd be disappointed by that, especially when it was a home. They're missing a lot of players, but a lot of teams are missing a lot of players, no more so than Clare, who are missing Tony Kelly, Shane O'Donnell, Peter Duggan only coming on. Mark Rogers wasn't playing, probably given a rest because of the Fitzgibbon Cup on Wednesday. So, was probably not as enjoyable a game as the Tipperary Galway one, but mm-hmm. was competitive nonetheless, and came right down to the very last puck out as well. So, yeah, it was entertaining. Well,
it does. It's always entertaining when it gets right down. You know, when you're engaged with it for the whole game, at the very least. I know you want to make a particular point on midfielder Paddy Levy.
Yeah, Paddy Levy. We've been watching him for Ballygunner for the last two or three years, and he's made this kind of a scoop. I seen someone call it the Paddy Levy paddle pass, and I think that's the best name for it. Like that. It's obviously. Maybe it was coined as the Brick Flick initially after Michael Brick Walsh, who's obviously a Waterford legend, and whenever he'd be in trouble, he just kind of, there might be a few players around him, he'd just be able to flick the ball rather than having to take the swing, like mm-hmm. where you might get hooked from behind,
yeah.
that he'd just flick it away. And obviously, as well as that, you're never going to get done for throwing the ball because it's flick with the hurl, like.
Yeah. But it's unconventional.
It's unconventional, and very few actually do it.
Yeah.
And nobody does it to the extent that Paddy Levy does it.
Well, he does it when no one's even on him. Like, it's just a simple exactly. pass back to the keeper, no yeah. pressure whatsoever. It's just his, like, instinct.
That's his thing, like, and, like, Michael Brick Walsh was known for it, but he would never have done it. Like, I was planning to come in today and count up how many times that Paddy Levy actually did it in the game yesterday. Because it was definitely more than ever, seen as he was a sweeper yesterday.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he was getting on the ball a lot. So I was going to count it up, but Christy O'Connor from the Irish Examiner already did that for me, so right. saved me a job. He said that of Levy's 24 plays, he executed the Brick Flick. I'm calling it the Paddy Paddle. The Paddy Paddle Pass. He executed it on 17 occasions. Levy had more possessions than any other player, 24. Much of that was down to him operating as a sweeper, but he had a huge influence in the match and was directly involved in the build-up to 1-7 and also scored a point himself. Like, he was only dispossessed in the match once, like, which for a man who was on the ball 24 times Like that's very good going.
Yeah.
He's just, if the ball comes near him, he's brilliant in the breaks, to win a break, to come out of a tussle with the ball, and he just never gives away possession. Like, he's so safe on the ball. I'd say he's David Fitzgerald's dream player, because David Fitzgerald loves having a sweeper, and this man just seems to be, he was brilliant there yesterday, and the Paddy paddle pass now is going to take over, I'd say, because it's really clever and effective skill. Like,
yeah, hopefully people will be trying it up and down the country now. Westmeath against Limerick. Westmeath actually put in a good account of themselves here when I sort of checking it on Score BO, that they were winning at a stage, sort of in the second half at least anyway, but Limerick just doing Limerick things.
Yeah, well, Limerick, like, their team isn't as, like, they're missing a load of their, like, first choice players, you know, but Westmeath had, they were going very well. You know, it was 14-all after 15 minutes. Westmeath were actually winning 14-12 after around 48, coming up to 20 minutes to go, like, and, you know, having been hammered by Galway last weekend in Pearse Stadium, I suppose they would have been determined to at least be competitive. Mm-hmm. And it's probably not ideal when you're coming up against Limerick, but Westmeath had them under pressure, and it was until really they got a red card for David Williams that Limerick kind of started to pull away. And Donico Dalig, well, that was late on now, in fairness. Limerick probably were pulling away, as you'd expect, but Donico Dalig got a late goal, and he's obviously a very good player. We've seen him for Mona Lean in the All-Ireland Intermediate Final. He was a man of the match against Tourine last year, and could be one of these lads who might break through. But as we've seen so many times, it's a very hard team to break into, that Limerick team. Like, you mm-hmm. have to be, like, even Cathal O'Neill, as good as he's been the last few years, he's still probably struggled to nail down a starting place. Like, so there'd be a lot of lads chomping at the bit there, but it was a positive display for Westmeath, and you know they'll definitely take a few positives from it.
Yeah, one thing that can take positives from their match as well is Antrim. Last week they got annihilated really by Limerick, and you know there's almost no shame in that these days. Like, it can happen to almost any team, but expectations wouldn't have been too high with Dublin coming to Corrigan Park, and Antrim. Well, I mean, they really should have won this game. I mean, we're talking about Offaly kicking themselves. Antrim will definitely be kicking themselves at this. They lost 121 to 120, just a point in it. They were winning in injury time, and then a very, very late, and you have to say, fortunate goal for Dublin got them over the line in the end.
Yeah, well, I'd say Antrim, like, they would have been expecting to beat Dublin. Like, I'd say that's like, they wouldn't see this as a surprise or anything like that. I'd say they definitely target Dublin, like, because Dublin are a team who have been struggling the last few years. Like, they were well beaten by Tipperary last week. They're missing a good few players. You know, the likes of Keane O'Callaghan, Ryan McBride, there's a few others as well. I know Chris Crummy is coming back, and that's a huge, huge boost to them. He'll be back. He was back in the country last week, like, so he'll be a massive boost for them. So Antrim would have seen this as, you know, this was their game to win, and mm-hmm. they were so close to doing it.
Yeah, no, they absolutely were. Antrim are actually, like, the reason I say that they've got positives to take from this is that when you consider the amount of departures that they've had this year, like the Elliott boys from Dunloy, you know, Sean Elliott, Keelan Malloy, Owen O'Neill, Joe Maskey, they've all departed from the panel this year. I think they're travelling. Neil McManus is the big one, who obviously retired, so that's just going to be a huge lift or a huge miss for a plethora of reasons, little like what he can do on the hurling pitch, and then just his presence in the dressing room and his leadership and things like that. But funny, I was talking to Dominic McKinley, or Woody as he's better known, one of the heroes of Antrim, you know, throughout that team in the late 80s and early 90s. And he was sort of telling me that one of the probably the biggest loss this year for Antrim and the biggest concern was the departure of Ryan Elliott, the Dunloy goalkeeper. He thought that was a massive, massive loss, and that Tiernan Smith from Ballycastle, who's been doing, you know, impressing really well for Ballycastle. You know, he sort of had been thrust in, and it's a big step up, you know, and from what out of the blue. And then it's just so unfortunate as well that, you know, I think he kind of lost the ball in the sun, you know, in that last hurdle, and kind of fumbled it, and that's what led to the goal. So, like, it's just that added thing, you know, for Antrim to lose all them players, and they are figuring things out and adapting and moving things. Like, there were six players in that team that were on the under-20 team. So, like, to lose by a single point to Dublin, you know, like, it's not the worst place in the world to be.
No, they'll be sick, though, because there's a big chance. And, you know, they're too good to be looking for moral victories, and I know, well, they're definitely not. Were you saying that they're struggling for goalies in Antrim as well?
Yeah, it's just something Dominic was saying. He thinks that they need to make it more of a, what's the word, like an attractive position for young players to do. I suppose everyone, but that's an old adage in any way. Listen, any sport, no one initially wants to be the goalkeeper, really, but you find someone who's good at it from a young age and you sort of mould them. But he seems to think that there's a shortage. Have you found that?
I wouldn't really. No. Like, I'd be surprised that is the way in Antrim. I know Ryan Elliott has been a very good goalie the last few years, both for Dunloy and for Antrim. So that's, you know, it was disappointing. It was such a, like, a lot of goalies can drop the ball, and it's probably the last thing they want to do, like, is when the ball's, high ball's coming in and they drop it. And It was such a scrappy goal. Like, it was nearly as if Keane O'Sullivan kind of rugby tackled him over the line then. Like, it was nearly borderline.
A foul?
Borderline. Like, yeah.
No, it definitely was. And your heart breaks for him. But like I say, he's meant to be a very impressive young man. So I'm sure he'll bounce back from that. And Antrim will bounce back with such a young team. And then so many players are still to come back from injuries as well. That's all we have time for today on the GAR. We'll be back next week, and there'll be plenty of football as well to talk about. It's not just a hurling show, don't worry. Although I really enjoyed that. How did you think I did? Why would you rate me?
I'll give you 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10? Oof, that's pretty impressive. Just a reminder that joe.ie have a new podcast. It's called You Must Be Joking, with the hilarious Willa White and our very own Eric Lawler. It's a comedy podcast with some brilliant guests lined up. The first episode with Des Bishop came out on Thursday, and you can listen to that now. This Thursday, they will be chatting to PJ Gallagher, so be sure to subscribe to the podcast in your podcast app and listen to it after you listen to the GAR.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.